This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
The night sky for November 2015. Well, we have a longer period of darkness now, which is very good. And the sky in the late evening is really getting very interesting. Setting towards the west, we have the great square of Pegasus. And close to that in Andromeda is the lovely galaxy M31, the Andromeda Galaxy. And on the night sky page of the Jodrell Bank website, I give a chart to show you how to find it. Moving across, we come to higher up, Cassiopeia, and then Perseus, with the demon star Algol. It's an eclipsing binary, and very regularly, its brightness dips by a significant amount. Between the two is a lovely region where we have the double cluster of Perseus. And with binoculars or a small telescope, it can look very lovely. But then, of course, we have that beautiful region of the night sky rising in the southeast, the constellation of Taurus, with the open cluster, the Pleiades, and below and down to its left, we have the Hyades cluster. There's a red star. It's called Aldebaran. It's actually a red giant star that is actually in the region of the Hyades cluster, but it's about halfway between us and them. It's not part of the cluster itself. And then if you'll stay up a little bit later in the evening, Orion has risen. The three stars of its belt point down to the left towards Sirius, and below the belt is that region where we have M42, the Orion Nebula. Above and a bit to the left of Orion, there's a bright star called Capella, a yellowish star, in the constellation of Auriga. Again, that's in the Milky Way, and there's some very nice open clusters there, M38, M36, and M37. And then, just rising over in the east, are the twin stars of Castor and Pollux, the heads of the twins, the heavenly twins. So I do hope you enjoy looking up at the heavens. The other morning, just as I was writing my notes for this particular month, I was up quite early, actually in Sweden, and there was a lovely viewing of Venus and Jupiter together, very close in the sky. And in fact, we do in fact have, as we shall see in the highlights, some very nice conjunctions of the planets coming up. So Jupiter is now a wonderful morning object. It rises soon after midnight by the end of November. It starts the month shining at magnitude -1.8. Its angular diameter is 33 arc seconds. During the month, these increase to 2, -2, and 35.5, respectively. It lies in Leo, 8 degrees over to the right of Denebola, and is gradually moving down towards Virgo before it starts its retrograde motion, that's backwards across the sky, in January. So, of course, with a small telescope, early risers should be able to see the equatorial bands in the atmosphere and the four Galilean moons as they weave their way around it. Now Saturn passes behind the Sun on the 29th of November. It might just be seen using binoculars at the very beginning of the month, just a few degrees above the southwestern horizon, about 45 minutes after sunset. But really, we'll have to wait for a while yet to see it in the pre-dawn sky. Mercury, that reaches superior conjunction, that is on the far side of the Sun, on November the 17th, and could not be seen for much of the month. It might just be picked up using binoculars low in the east, about 20 minutes before sunrise, in the first few days of November. Now Mars is moving into its current apparition. It rises about 3:30 a.m. as the month begins, shining at magnitude +1.7, so not that bright. This increases to magnitude +1.5 as the month progresses, as at the same time the angular diameter increases from 4.2 to 4.7 arc seconds. This is really still too small for any details to be seen on its salmon pink surface. Venus, rising at about 3:30 again in the morning, starts the month dominating the eastern sky before dawn, in a close grouping with both Jupiter and Mars, as will be detailed in the highlights. its magnitude drops only slightly from -4.4 to -4.2 during the month, as the angular diameter drops from 22.7 to 17.6 arcseconds. One might think that the brightness had dropped rather more than that, but at the same time, the illuminated part of the disk increases from 54 to 63%, and the two things basically compensate each other, so the magnitude stays almost constant. Venus is rapidly moving closer to the Sun, and will have dropped by about 30 degrees towards the horizon by month's end, so will becoming progressively less prominent. Moving from Leo into Virgo, it passes 0.4 degrees away from the 3.6 magnitude Beta Virginis, that's on the 13th, and less than 0.2 degrees from Eta Virginis on the 21st. It's really a lovely sight to see in the morning sky at the moment. So what about the highlights? Well, November is a month where we have a chance of seeing some meteor showers. The first one, peaking around the 10th of November, which is very good because the moon is new on the 11th, so will not have any effect, is the northern Taurid shower. They're actually quite slow. They come from behind the Earth, and in fact you can therefore see them probably best before midnight. They normally give a few meteors per hour. They come from a comet called Comet 2P Encke. The tail is actually quite rich in large particles, and this year we should pass through a relatively rich band, so it's possible that we might see a number of fireballs. That would be exciting. The better known November shower is the Leonids, which peak on the 9th of the 17th, 18th of the month. The moon sets at 21:30 on the 17th, so that will not be a problem for observing the first predicted peak at 9 o'clock 21:00 UT on the 17th, and the second early the following morning at 04:00. So let's hope for a clear night on the night of the 17th, 18th. As you might expect, the shower's radiant lies within the sickle of Leo, and meteors can be spotted from the 15th to the 20th of the month. They actually enter the atmosphere pretty fast, about 71 kilometers per second, and they're actually quite hard to photograph. But you never know, you might just capture a bright fireball. Up to 15 meteors per hour could be observed near the zenith. The Leonids are famous because every 33 years a meteor storm might be observed when the parent comet 53P Temple Tuttle passes close to the Sun. In 1999, a rate of 3,000 meteors per hour were observed. But at the moment, we're halfway between these impressive events, hence a far lower expected rate. On November the 3rd, before sunrise, Venus and Mars are under a degree apart. You can't fail to spot them if you look over to the east if it's clear. Jupiter will actually lie about 7 degrees to their upper right. On the 7th of November, a thin crescent moon joins Mars and Venus. Jupiter, a little bit further away now, is about 9 degrees to the upper right. A good time to look for M31, the Andromeda galaxy, and perhaps M33 in Triangulum, is around the second week of November. That's around the time of new moon. On the night sky page, I give quite detailed instructions of how to find them both. Well, as we come towards the end of November, on November the 25th, the full moon is actually quite close to the Hyades cluster in Taurus. And around the last week of November, 25th to 30th or so, about 1 hour before sunrise, Jupiter is now getting to quite a respectable elevation before dawn. You can see it above an elevation of 20 degrees for about 2 hours in what they call an astronomically dark sky. So this is probably the month in which to start seriously observing and imaging it, to see, for example, if the great red spot is still shrinking. Again, the picture of the month on the night sky page is a wonderful plan or map of Jupiter taken by the Hubble Space Telescope. And it shows, in fact, a much smaller great red spot than we've been used to seeing. So quite a lot to see in November. I do hope you have some good clear nights and enjoy observing the heavens.
Thanks for that, Ian. And for our listeners below the equator, here's our Antipodean starry teller, Haritina Mogashanu, with the night sky where you are. And the music that you'll hear in this month's Night Sky South has been really kindly provided to us by New Zealand composer Rian Sheehan, and we'll add some links to his stuff on the website so you can check out some more of that.
Welcome to November. My name is Haritina Mogoshanu, and today I am your storyteller from Space Place at Carter Observatory in Aotearoa, New Zealand. November is my favorite month of the year. The name of November comes from Latin, meaning the ninth. It was the ninth month from the beginning of the year in March. November is the time when the star cluster known as the Pleiades is visible again in the evening sky. In the northern part of the world, November is a month of contrasts. Too dark, too sharp, frost, mud, Chernozem, dead forest leaves, and the river. These are all that I remember was left of life in my November's childhood. And from the clouds to the land, it all felt metallic and heavy. Halloween is the harbinger of November, and the Pleiades is its omen. On the other side of the world, in Aotearoa, New Zealand, where the sea surrounds us from all directions, the sky is darker than dark, and the stars are very bright, we prepare for summer. November here is called Orongo, which means the time after the great rain. Orongo is spectacular in Aotearoa. It harbors the most beautiful asterism I have ever seen, the Grand Canoe of Tamarereti, Te Waka o Tamarereti. The story of Tamarereti is this. A very long time ago, soon after the first people were placed on the earth, there were no stars in the sky at night. It was so dark that it was impossible to move around outside at night without tripping into things. The Taniwha were the only creatures that were able to move around in the dark. The Taniwha were the guardians of the nature, and they liked to eat anything that was moving outside at night. During the daytime, the Taniwha slept at the bottoms of lake and deep rivers. At this time, lived a great warrior named Tamarereti. His house was at the south end of the great lake that we call Taupo. One morning, Tamarereti awoke in his whare and felt very hungry. But when he looked in his food store, he found that he had very little left to eat. As he stood in the door of his whare looking out over the rippling waters of the lake, he decided to go fishing and catch some fish for his family too. It was a lovely mild spring morning with a light breeze from the south. Tamarereti gathered up his fishing lines and baits and put them in his canoe, his waka, and pushed off onto the lake. He hoisted the sail and set off for his favorite fishing spot. When he arrived, he lowered the sail and started fishing. After a while, Tamarereti had caught some nice fish, so he decided to head back to the village for a late breakfast. Unfortunately, the wind had dropped and he was becalmed. The day was mild and it was a long way back to the village, so Tamarereti decided to lie down in the bottom of the waka for a snooze. It was peaceful in the waka, and with the gentle rocking of it and the sound of the waves lapping against the sides, Tamarereti was soon fast asleep. While he slept, the gentle breeze returned, and the canoe with Tamarereti on board sailed quietly towards the north end of the lake. Tamarereti slept for a long time. When he awoke, he looked over the side of the canoe, and to his surprise, found that he was at the far end of the lake. There was no way he could make it back home across the lake before dusk. And after dusk, the Taniwha, the guardians who ate anything that was moving in the dark, would come and eat him. Tamarereti was a brave warrior. He was not afraid of fighting with the Taniwha, but he loved his family dearly. All he wanted was to get back home to his wife and children, to the Ahika, the sacred fire of his family. By now he was extremely hungry. He was a wise person, Tamarereti, who knew that important decisions cannot be taken on an empty stomach. he knew he had to eat. So he sailed his canoe to a nearby pebble beach, threw the anchor overboard and paddled ashore with his fish. There, he lit a small cooking fire. He skewered his fish onto a stick and baked them over the flames. When they were cooked, he sat on a fallen log and quietly ate the fish while he listened to the sounds of the breeze in the trees, the song of the tui, and the rippling of the little waves as they washed over the pebbles on the beach. It was warm and it felt very peaceful. As Tamariretti was looking into the dancing flames, he noticed that all the pebbles he used for the fireplace were shining bright. Suddenly, this gave him an idea. He loaded as many of the shining pebbles into his canoe as it would hold and pushed off into the lake. He told to himself, "What if instead of going back home through the lake, I will sail onto the great river from the sky?" Tamariretti sailed towards the river and guided his canoe carefully into the entrance just as the sun slipped below the horizon and darkness descended on the earth. The current of the river was strong and the canoe moved along at steady pace. As the canoe, the waka, entered the sky, Tamariretti began to scatter the bright shining pebbles in all directions as he went along. The wake of the canoe became the Milky Way, and the pebbles became its stars. This is why we have stars in the sky. You might also wish to know that by the time Tamariretti had thrown out all the pebbles, he had sailed right across the sky and was able to see his village in the first light of dawn. He was very tired, so he beached his canoe and tied the anchor rope to a large tree stump. Having secured his canoe, Tamariretti walked slowly to his fare, and just as the sun rose above the hills in the east, he clambered to the door and lay down on his sleeping mats, exhausted. In just the twinkling of an eye, Tamariretti was sound asleep. Tamariretti slept soundly for many hours. When he awoke in the middle of the afternoon, he found Rangi Nui, the god of the sky, sitting outside the fare waiting for him. At first, Tamariretti was afraid that Rangi Nui would be angry with him for littering the sky with thousands of pebbles. Much to the surprise of Tamariretti, Rangi Nui was very pleased with the new appearance of the night sky. For the first time, there was enough light at night to enable people to see what they were doing and allow them to move around safely. Best of all, Rangi Nui was delighted with the beauty of the night sky. So that people in the future would remember how the stars were placed in the sky and how the sky was made beautiful at night, Rangi Nui asked Tamariretti if he would allow his canoe to be permanently anchored among the stars. Together, that evening, they chose a place in the sky where the wake of the canoe is at its brightest, and there, the great canoe of Tamariretti floats peacefully to this day. The canoe of Tamariretti set sail in November from Aotearoa, signaling to Maori navigators that it was time to start planning their journeys back to Rarohenga. Rarohenga means a domain, the rohe beyond the sun, the ra. That is what Maori call the places they cannot see beyond the curvature of earth. If you want to see the canoe of Tamariretti, start from where the sun has set. There is the scorpion, which represents the prow of the canoe, and the sting of it is the beautifully carved wood above the bow of the canoe. A short distance below, Antares is the star at the end of the scorpion's curving tail that marks the place where the bow meets the water. The curve of the scorpion's tail and body sinks into the waters of the Milky Way, which at this time of the year surrounds Aotearoa like a beautiful, glistening river. As water waves move along the side of the canoe, The bright orange star Antares marks the crest of a wave as the great Waka rides at anchor. From the bow, the anchor rope is marked by Alpha Centauri, the third brightest star in the sky, and also Beta Centauri. Together, these are known as the pointers of the Southern Cross. The Southern Cross represents the great stone anchor that keeps the canoe of Tamarereti in its place to remind us all how the stars and Milky Way were placed in the night sky so long ago. A tall mast rises from the canoe all the way to the star Akenar, which marks the northern world, the end of the river Eridanus. The two beautiful galaxies that we know as the Magellanic Clouds are the sails of the Waka. Atutahi, also known as Canopus, it's the second brightest star in the sky, and he is the chief of all stars as well as the navigator of the canoe. The constellation Orion makes up the sternpost. It is elaborately carved and it goes all the way from Betelgeuse, a red giant star, to high above the water marked by Rigel, a bluish supergiant star, directly above the line of three stars. From the top of the sternpost, there is a ribbon of flax blowing out in the wind. At the tip of it is orange Aldebaran. The flax is the Hyades cluster. Still, further left is the Pleiades, which at this time of the year is only marking the feathers that adorn the canoe floating on the ripples left behind by the Waka of Tamarereti. Matariki, the name that the Maori sometimes give to this cluster, is only a memory of winter, as the cluster is only called so in the morning of July, when here is winter time and it marks the Maori New Year. After Orongo, which is this time of the year, when the Pleiades appears again in the evening sky, the cluster is part of the Waka of Tamarereti and seen as a whole, decorating as feathers the waters of the Milky Way. Still, six stars are visible to the eye. Dozens are seen in binoculars. The cluster is 440 light years away and around 70 million years old. Polynesian and Maori navigation is very different in every aspect from anything I have come across elsewhere. Intricate and beautiful, it is like nothing I have ever seen. They split the horizon into 32 parts called houses, and the navigators watch the stars as they rise from each house. At different latitudes, they will rise from a different house. Looking at pairs of stars at zenith to find the direction north-south, and also at specific zenith stars, they can pinpoint locations with precision. Skybound people, they keep in their minds a vision of the sky above the lands they are trying to get to. And as they navigate, they say that all they do is bringing that vision closer, almost as if the canoe is standing still and the land is getting closer and closer, as if the land is coming towards them. And if they keep that image of the place of destination in their mind, they say everything else is falling into place. I have fallen in love with Polynesian navigation. What comes after the rainiest month, Orongo, is indeed a very special time of the year. I always liked how we can see aligned along the Milky Way on the horizon from south to east, the third brightest star, Alpha Centauri, which is also our closest neighbor, at 425 light years away. Then Canopus Atutahi, the second brightest star in the sky, also known here as the Cat Star, and Sirius Takurua, the Dog Star, the brightest star in the entire sky, twinkling like a diamond as the air disperses its light. What an amazing sight! On the opposite side of the sky, the great square of Pegasus is riding the northern horizon. It is not only that we can see the three brightest stars in the sky, but in the same time from here, in Aotearoa, New Zealand, we can also see the most prominent four galaxies of our world with the naked eye. The Milky Way, the Magellanic Clouds, and very low in the north, the Andromeda Galaxy. easily seen in binoculars in a dark sky and faintly visible to the eye. It appears as a spindle of light. Saturn is the only naked eye planet in the evening sky. It sets in the southwest 2 hours after the sun at the beginning of the month. It looks like a medium bright creamy white star directly below Orange Antares, the brightest star in the Scorpion. Because it is low in the sky, it will look rather fuzzy in a telescope. By mid-month, it is disappearing in the dusk. Venus, Mars, and Jupiter are in the eastern dawn sky. The three planets are close together at the beginning of the month, rising just after 4 a.m. Venus is brightest, with Jupiter a close second. Mars is a fainter red star, just less prominent than Venus. The goddess of beauty Venus and the god of war Mars have a brief encounter on the beginning of November, what we Earthlings call a conjunction. This concludes our podcast for November 2015 at Space Place at Carter Observatory. As the Maori say, Efiti anana fetu o te rangi, the stars are shining in the sky, ko takoto ake nei ko papa tuanuku, whilst Mother Earth lays beneath. Kia kaha, and clear skies from the Space Place at Carter Observatory in Aotearoa, New Zealand.